We have targeted 5 o'clock as the finishing time. I also want to welcome the delegation from SAMAF. It is once more a privilege to have you with us, and we're hoping that our interaction will be fruitful, especially improving the life of our people. You're welcome, Dr. Wang. Let me now form your quorum. So, Ariko, can you guide us in terms of apologies?
Thank you, Chair. We've received written apologies from Honorable Kotetsi and Honorable Holomisa. And then Mr. Marie, who will be arriving a bit late, but he will attend the meeting as well.
Thanks, Ariko. May we also welcome members from the NCC and also from the department. We are not going to waste any more time with introductions, with the opening remarks, but we'll give you the opportunity, Mr. Naidu, to brief the committee on your annual report. Over to you.
Chairperson, honorable members, and a very good afternoon to you. Yes, it is indeed a pleasure for us to also present to this committee, and I think the first time I was when I presented the strategy document a few weeks back, and we found the interaction very useful, and we believe that ongoing interaction with this committee will be useful to this organization, particularly as you mentioned, in ensuring that we provide adequate services to the poor. This is now the annual report of the 2009-2010 financial year. Change this report, I thought maybe it would be useful for us to reflect on our mandate, our vision, mission, values, and our products and services. And then I thought maybe to start with the report is to go to the auditor general's report, because I mean, there are some key issues that the auditor general raised in the report, and also to just inform the committee what progress we've made in addressing some of those issues. CELAC is now close on 5 years in existence, and so just very briefly to say what we have done since inception. And then we'll deal with the 2009-10 performance and also the financial performance. We'll briefly touch on our human resources report, and I think the committee requested that we also just engage on the new technology that we are utilizing in the organization, and we'll also talk about some of the work that we're currently doing with respect to new technology. And then the issue of supply chain management in terms of the management of our procurement services. And then we'll just touch on corporate governance and our challenges. The overall mandate of CEMAC is to establish sustainable microfinance institutions that can provide easy access to finance to the poor of the poorest in our country. The second mandate is to create an enabling environment for effective financial mediation and also the facilitation of working markets. So I suppose the second aspect is an area that we probably need to just maybe pay a bit more attention going into the future. We just begin setting up our systems because it is a fairly new organization. And obviously, I think the ultimate is really strong, effective, and efficient APEX fund. The vision of the organization is to ensure that we have active participation of the enterprise in poor and economic activities in our economy. I think in this respect, I think we just need to ensure that CHEMA becomes a bit more visible, and obviously I indicate we're fairly new, and we intend to be more robust when it comes to that particular issue. Then obviously also reduce financial challenges so that people can better their livelihood. We want to create sustainable financial intermediaries that are not reliant on government funding going into the future. I must just say, Chair, this particular issue, I think we've learned over 3 to 4 years that it's not a short-term issue. It's a 5 to 10 years issue that we need to support these institutions until they become totally sustainable. And then obviously adopt best practice models. To do all of the above, we need to have competent employees within the organization and the utilization of effective systems to deliver services. I spoke about a financially sustainable CHEMA under the mandate. The mission of the institution is to have effective mobilization and wholesaling of capital for microfinance institutions with proven potential. The development of human capital in the economic environment through capacity building and institutional development. I must say this area, and I alluded to this when I presented the strategy, is quite a challenging area because it's quite difficult in trying to attract suitable candidates in the microfinance environment. But we are doing a lot in terms of an organization to achieve that. We also want to contribute to policy development, but obviously we won't do it on our own. We are fairly small. We will work both with the DTI and Economic Development Department to ensure that we contribute to this. And we also want to develop valuable partnerships between business, government, and the community. Here, the values that we aspire to is integrity, transparency, professionalism, accountability, and high performance. I suppose the first two goes without saying, particularly in the environment that we work in. But I think the last 3 years in organization, I've been there now 3.5 months in the organization, my think capacity. I think we have a lot of work to do, if we want to be honest with ourselves. And we have commenced with that work. What we're also finding is that the staff within the organization are very, very receptive to what we are doing. I'd like to say the large majority of the staff members within the organization, and you always have a few that will be resistant to change. Here, our products and services, firstly, we provide wholesaling loans to Nigeria up to the value of 10 million rand, and they allowed to lend to end users up to the value of 10,000. We've spoken about this in our strategy. We probably want to increase that going forward. We're still working through that strategy. Then we have capacity building grants. The first one is loan linked, and it's 50% of the total loan amount approved for the FSC. But what we do, we attach milestones to each of them. So if we do approve the capacity building grant, we just don't give it at one time. There are milestones that have to be achieved, and we also utilize this for indirect payment, where we engage the service provider directly to provide the service to these intermediaries. And then we have a one-off grant of 200,000 rand. These are largely for FSCs and startup intermediaries. We also have technical support. We have staff on the ground that provides technical support. Here, I'm also happy to announce that the Economic Development Department has agreed to provide us with some funding to engage interns, people that have just finished the degree, to be able to provide also additional capacity to provide technical support. And then we also supervise the FSCs and the FSCs in terms of the exemption of 87 of the Bank Act. And this is largely a saving mechanism that we utilize in communities. Here now, the Auditor General's report. Now, I think you will note in the Auditor General's report we have a qualification And this qualification largely arose from the implementation of a new IT system in the middle of the financial year at the institution. Now, it took its hold, I think the process was not properly managed, whereby the staff couldn't account for journals that were processed. But what I am happy to report here is that we have substantially managed to account for all of those journals. At that point in time, it was 1.7 million rand. As it stands of today, 20,000 rand. So the next audit will clear this. I think if we had more time towards the end of the financial year, we have been able to account for all of those journals and not had the qualification. So I'm happy to report that it wasn't any fraud, it wasn't any issues of financial mismanagement, but just an issue of not managing the implementation properly. Then we had the emphasis of matter. Now, today, we had a restatement of corresponding figures, and this largely dealt with the leases, which was not properly calculated in the previous financial year. We had irregular expenditure. I'll talk a bit more about the irregular expenditure just now and what actions we've taken. We've had material impairments. Now, an institution such as Tamar, and particularly because we have just started, and this is not making an excuse, I think we are developmental, and I think we must understand that at some stage we will have impairments. Because we're dealing with the poor of the poorest, we're dealing with intermediaries that are just starting up, and they are also setting up their systems. Now, I think auditors also need to understand the mandate of SAMAC with ensuring that management are not negligent in what they do. So we will have impairments. Now, the impairments are effectively a write-off. I think we've learned a lot from that. We've learned a lot in terms of managing the funds that we give to intermediaries. I mentioned now we have targets that the intermediaries have to meet before we actually disperse the total funding that has been approved. Then we've had the non-consolidation of controlled financial intermediaries. This chair, in fact, is an issue that arose from the time the institution was established, wherein the contracts were structured in such a manner that it entails SAMAF to consolidate all of these institutions with SAMAF financial statements. Now, this is probably an impossible task because these institutions have different financial years, and some of their systems and controls will probably not be as good as we'd expect it to be. However, this particular emphasis will be gone in the next financial year because one of the last few intermediaries, the contract is coming to an end. Now, I want to talk about the irregular expenditures here. Now, we've had four items of irregular expenditure. The first item was in terms of the delegation. The approval was not done in terms of the delegation. And I want to deal with this together with another item where we plan a strategic planning session and the proper procurement processes were not followed. Now, the individual that's involved in this at the time when I started work in an advanced stage of pregnancy, and I thought it's probably prudent not to attend to the matter at that time. However, I've had the discussion with the individual concerned. As soon as she returns, we will be taking the disciplinary action that's required in terms of this. Now, in terms of the qualification, I also want to say that in terms of that qualification, the director in the finance department concerned had his salary reduced and also with a final written warning. The CFO at the time of us taking the disciplinary action had gone on a major operation. But I did have a discussion with her, and I did indicate to her the implications of the qualification and what we intend doing when she returns. She was meant to return today. I got a call this morning to say that she's so unwell, she wouldn't be able to return today. But as soon as she returns here, we will be taking the relevant disciplinary action. But maybe it's an issue that I can engage with in committee in terms of my discussions, but I think that will be individual concern. I think it will be difficult to actually discuss in the open. Then there was the issue about an overpayment to a service provider. This money is recoverable. We'll be recovering by end of this month. The staff member concerned had been given a final written warning. In fact, it went to a disciplinary process. This wasn't a final written warning. It was a disciplinary process. Whereby we had a chairperson and the chairperson concluded that a final written warning is appropriate. Here I want to say that in the finance department, been there 3.5 months now, I'm pretty comfortable that we've got all our systems, our processes up and running, that coming up this financial year, we probably will have an unqualified audit report. We've worked with that quite intensively with the finance department, and we have, in fact, our management accounts and everything else is probably up to speed now, so we pay careful attention to that. So, Chair, that's effectively the issues of the qualification and the emphasis of matter. Then, the rest of the issues actually relate to the previous issue, non-compliance with the regulatory and reporting requirements. I think that deals with the performance information, and I'll talk a little bit about that also. The lack of effective, efficient, and transparent systems and internal controls, that relates to the irregular expenditure and the overpayment. Okay, you'll see later on in this presentation, I talk about our procurement section that operates very effectively. All of these issues were done outside the procurement section, and that is why it happened. But we're putting processes in place so that this doesn't happen in the future. The usefulness of reported information, changes of the plan, performance information not approved, plan report and performance targets not verifiable, reliability of reported information, and reported targets not available. Now, all of those, I'll categorize them in terms of performance management, performance information management. Okay, what we had done is in July, we had revisited our strategy. And the strategy that I presented here was a revisited strategy. We ensured that all of the issues that were raised in the Auditor General's report were addressed in the revised strategy. That's the first thing we did. The second thing we did, we are now beginning a process of intensive quarterly reviews with all of the provincial managers and the executive at the head office. The first one will start next week. We're having a two-day session where we'll interrogate the information that's submitted, also interrogate to ensure that we have sufficient supporting information to support what we're reporting. But here, there's one area that I'd like to report to the committee that we might have a little bit of a challenge, and that's the information that comes from our financial interviews. You see, they have to update systems to ensure that they keep adequate records that can be audited. Now we've started another process with respect to that. We have now started a quarterly FI forum meeting, and the first one we in fact had yesterday and today with the Western Cape. Because we are here, we thought it would be useful for us to use that process to engage with the financial intermediaries. To also engage with them to ensure that our strategies go forward in demand-driven and not supply-driven. So we intend having this in all our provinces. As executive, we'd at least 2 a year to ensure we take care of this. But yeah, I must say, come the next reporting period, that might still be an issue in our audit report. Then, what have we done since inception? And this is just in our fifth year. I think the organization probably could have done better, but I think we've done reasonably well. We have managed to establish a global network of 51 financial intermediaries directly benefiting 35,000 end users, and we've distributed loans to the tune of 49.8 million rand. We spent 26.3 million rand in grant support to build the capacity of FIs throughout the country. We built an infrastructure in all of the 9 provinces, and we employed 61 people, of whom 35 people are employed in the provinces. So the interesting thing about this, and I know the committee asked previously, what the difference between SAMAS and KULA is. I'm more and more convinced, and I said in the chair, that there's a need for SAMAS as an independent institution, because it works in a different market. It works in a market that's highly developmental. It works in a market that needs to interact with all of these FIs on an ongoing and regular basis, intensely. I thought I should just place that on the table, because I think we need to have further discussion on that particular matter going forward. We're also having a discussion with our parent body, the Economic Development Department, the Minister and the Director General with respect to that. Okay, the actual performance information, I took this out of the annual report, and I thought I should go through each one of them, particularly those where we've not met the targets. Now, where we haven't met the targets are highlighted in red. Where we've met them or we've exceeded them, I've highlighted them in blue. Okay, we supported 11 microfinance intermediaries. In the financial year, we set our target of 8. Now, SSCs are essentially saving mobilization institutions. We targeted 10. We only supported 4. I think a lot of our standards were a bit difficult for these SSCs to me, but we work with them, and hopefully we will get this right. And I also indicate in our strategy session, we need to have different levels of support for different pages of these intermediaries. We're also working with them through our strategy planning session that we currently engage in. The number of end users that we supported was 6,170. We targeted 3,120. The outer impact, if you multiply that by 5, and generally that's the norm that's utilized, is 30,000 individuals that we impacted on. So we take 6,000 by 5 is 30,000. Then here the end user woman profile, and you see the other items that are in red here are in fact probably not a bad thing. Even though we didn't meet the target, we'll see the other target has been exceeded. Now the woman profile, we target 67. We managed to support 86% of our total population that we supported. End user rural population, we set 50. We've achieved 75. Now that impacted on the end user semi-urban profile, which we targeted 50% and 25. So it's not a bad thing that we only achieved 25 because the rural profile was 75. Then in terms of the loan utilization, we set ourselves the targets, as you know, that we set ourselves targets in terms of enterprise, housing, and education. And you see that we've exceeded our enterprise, and obviously housing and education is lower than what we targeted, and probably that is also a good thing because this is a sustainability issue. So people are utilizing this for running businesses. The FI loan repayment rate here is targeted 50%. We are achieving 92%. I can also say in the current financial year it's probably very close to that. And this is after taking into account our write-off institutions where we believe we wouldn't be able to recover funds from. In here, the demographic split is reflected here, and obviously just a graphic representation of what I had in the previous slide. Then here, the number of active savers, and obviously this is a new product that we've just commented external. I think it's a year and a half old now. We targeted 2,345. The actual was 8,500. However, the amount paid, the target is less. I mean, what we've achieved is less than the target. Now, here are two issues. I think one thing is the recession. I think the second thing is we need to just work on our wasted out target. This target was at the end of March. What the saving books were at the end of March. Now, if you understand the way it works is that people save and come Christmas and obviously the new year when they need to procure school books and pay school fees, the savings is low. And then they start again in April, May, June. So we need to find a way on how we can average it out for the year and say what the savings was throughout the year. And we're working on that. The end user satisfaction. Now, here, let me just say the next three targets. The next four targets. I'm even though this has been reported as it's been set as a target, I must be very honest, I don't know whether we can place a line on the actual figures that we've reported on. Because we actually don't have a proper scientific way of reporting. And this is the issue that the Auditor General has picked up on. But what we have done for this year, we are utilizing an external service provider for the first time to do some of this work for us, to actually design the questionnaires and obviously train our staff doing this on an annual basis. So we've put that process in place. We've in fact gone out to get a service provider right now, and hopefully by January, February next year, we'll have finalized that process to understand what the satisfaction is. Now, the profile of services consumed, we targeted that the loans will be 40%, grants and capacity building 50%, and saving mobilization 10%. Now, I think in terms of this, here again, I don't think the red is bad in any way because we had more loans taken up and obviously it's going to be repaid. In fact, by 28%, it exceeded our target. And the capacity building grant, I think largely this was because we changed some of the rules during the year. We set targets, people have to meet certain targets before they can start drawing down on some of these funds. The loans dispersed here, we have 20 million rand. The target is 13.1 million rand. I think my personal view is that we can improve on this quite substantially. I think it's also the organization's view. In fact, I can report that as of the end of the second quarter, in fact, as of the end of this month, we probably would have exceeded that 13 million already. That also goes for the grants dispersed. for the year. So we've done a lot of work in terms of working with the institution and ensuring that they comply with what we need. And we and we believe that we come very close or if not exceed our targets for the current financial year. Chair, I thought maybe we should also give a yearly performance comparison, starting from 2006 and 2007 to 2009 and 2010. You will see that, that the previous 3 years, you will see some of the target setting was probably very highly unreasonable. And you will see what has been achieved. And the last financial year was very similar to what we had achieved in the very first financial year. And I think that's largely related to consolidation, just looking at where we are at and what we need to do going forward. And I think a lot of that is now in place. By end of this financial year, we have put a lot of that in place. But I think it's just useful information for the committee going forward. Chair, the disbursement, the provincial split, for the loans and the targets. As I mentioned at the strategy session, there are two the challenges that we have with the Free State, KZN, Northwest, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape. We will be in there, we have started putting special interventions in place, also utilizing, trying to utilize or having engagement with institutions that have presence in all of these provinces that probably are based in probably the Western Cape, the Popo, to maybe work with the communities in those provinces to see how we can up our disbursement. So those are the provinces where we continue to be having issues. The funds that are not dispersed, yeah, I thought this is also probably a useful graph for the committee, just to see what we've done since 2006, 2007, and where we are at 2009 and 2010. You'll see that it is the funds that were not dispersed probably slightly worse as CNI indicated that it was probably a consolidation year for the institution itself. Then, Chair, I must also say that when I did this presentation, I think the institution did itself a disfavor when they set themselves targets. I think they were being highly ambitious. I don't think they had the personnel or the system in place to be able to achieve some of these targets. For example, the percentage improvement of FIs on the baseline. Firstly, we just needed to know what the baseline was to see what the improvement is going to be. I think they realized that as they went on in the year. So they removed the target during the mid-year review. Stakeholder brand awareness. Here, once again, I want to say that in terms of stakeholder brand awareness, the FI improved service delivery quality. I don't know how much reliance we can place on the actuals. Nevertheless, we targeted 50% and we achieved 40%. With these things, we need to understand what the baseline is. And I don't believe we have the systems in place to understand what the baseline is. And you'll see that we changed it in the strategy. Maybe going forward, it's a good thing to have, but I think we just need to get the fundamentals right in organization. The number of accredited SSCs, we targeted 60% of all of those applied. We reached 82%. Obviously, those, I'm going to just stress that those that had all of the processes right and the applications were pretty good. The cost per rand was first. See, I'm going to say that they said they would develop a tool and none was developed. I must be very honest with you. This is a very simplistic tool that needed to be developed, and I can't understand why it was not developed. It should have been developed, and it was not. I think this is symptomatic of all of the issues that we had around the finance environment. I think the implementation of the new software and all of those things where we had challenges. I think this is a result of that. Percentage of services within agreed turnaround time is 60%. Here we achieved 30%. We are embarrassed to report that we achieved 30%. But I can tell you, over the past few months, we have now essentially put ourselves huge target in terms of our turnaround time. We're looking at probably 80 to 90% achievement of our turnaround time. We're also putting systems in place, and I'll talk about the systems later on, that will monitor this and give us good information in terms of our turnaround time. Review of the credit policy, we have done that. In fact, we're doing that again this year because we still believe that I think some of the requirements are very stringent, and we also need to ensure that we categorize it in terms of the development of each of the financial intermediaries. Implementation of the credit policy, because it was reviewed late in the year, they have only implemented 40% of that credit policy. Now, I don't understand how they could have put the credit policy fully implemented when it was done that late in the year, and they say 100%. And once again, I must tell you that the three or four of these achievements, which I don't know whether you can place social reliance on. Implementation of due diligence, Chair, there I must say that the institution has done really well. In fact, I think some of the advisors are complimenting the institution in terms of the processes that it's put in place on due diligence. I think a lot of the impairments that had happened was of loans that were initially distributed, where the due diligence wasn't as good as it is now. And I can personally testify that it really got better as we went along. Approved revised organizational structure. I think the previous CEO with his management team looked at the structure and want to understand what's best for the organization. They put a proposal together, but this was delayed because of our move to the new department, and I think the minister is considering this, and the minister has asked me to report to the committee that he's in fact looking at the space in which SAMA sits and Kula to be able to review that, and hence he's not in fact addressed the issue of the CEO's position as yet. He's asking specifically to report that to the committee. In fact, my term has been extended to the 31st of March this year, so that giving sufficient time to address that. Then, chair, capacity building on financial systems and controls. We targeted 60% of. Now, the thing is, I don't know why they targeted. This should have been 100%. This is within the institution itself. We only achieved 55%, and I think that the result of that can be seen in the audit report. FI risk management. I think this is, in fact, the 80% is probably accurate because our due diligence and all of our processes we put in place around that has improved tremendously. The loan monitoring and technical support, we targeted 60%. We achieved 60%. I can tell you, as of now, Chair, the issue of the loan monitoring and technical support has improved much higher than 60%. We've got our systems in place. We are engaging with FIs. I spoke about our quarterly review sessions with the FIs, individually visiting FIs. Our due diligence team, in fact, is going to be in the Western Cape over the next couple of days visiting these FIs to look at the systems, processes, to ensure that the risks are mitigated. The work skills plan is a plan that has been developed, and we are in the process of implementing the plan. The succession plan, Chair, a plan has been developed, but I think in a small institution like this and the amount of money that we deal with, we're just trying to understand how we can implement the succession plan, and we're in the process of engaging on the implementation plan for this. The employee satisfaction rating index, I couldn't understand the target of 20%. I think maybe the institution was in distress at the time with the satisfaction employees, but it looks like we've achieved 70%. I can tell you, Chair, that since I've been there, I don't know whether the 70% has increased because I think people are in a discomfort zone at the moment because of the changes that we want to implement. We're putting performance management systems in place, ensuring that people account on a monthly basis. So people will be uncomfortable when it comes to that. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Percentage of units to comply with performance management. I mean, you can see this is reflective of what we are trying to do now. 94% have contracted on time. 61% of the RPA reviews done on time. I can tell you we've had a review session on the actual results of the performance management. We've not finalized that process because we've retained a whole lot of performance agreements because it was not, I mean, the actual performance assessment is not up to standard. I can also report to this committee, I doubt very much many people will be getting any performance bonuses for the previous financial year. There will be, and there will probably be low-level staff that will be getting it. We actually did the work that they meant to do. The budget variance, the target is for 20%, and this now includes both your loans that are going to be dispersed and also the capacity building. And I think the 30% is reflective of what had happened there because we had not dispersed the grants and the loans. The total operating cost to budget share, I couldn't understand it. I'm a finance person through and through, and I couldn't understand this target. They said that operating cost will be 100% of the total budget. I don't know. I'm assuming they were talking about 1:1, the operating cost is to the loans dispersed. But nevertheless, they said 94%, and I tried to interrogate at 94%. I didn't get a decent answer. So these are some of the areas that I thought I had difficulty in actually, and I think the Auditor General also did that. The cost to income ratio, we targeted 58%, 54%. I think we are quite close to that, so it isn't hugely different. Then here, the portfolio at risk. We targeted 40%, the actual was 31%. I think the 31% was largely related to the large impairments that we have had. I think going forward, this is probably going to improve because of the systems we put in place. And this is actually doing an assessment of where you think we're going to lose money. That's what it is. The percentage write-off, we said 50%. We only wrote off 17% in the year. But obviously, the impairment is slightly different from the write-off. This is the actual money that we wouldn't be able to collect. Even though we write it off, we still attempt to collect it. Now, the percentage attendance at the advisory board meeting, we had 100%. We have an advisory board in place and chair. The actual was only 25%. Now, there's very good reason for this. It was not because the board members were not committed. We had designations. We had lots of departmental officials that sat on the advisory board. And they had resigned from the department and their positions couldn't be full-time anymore. But I'm happy to report, as of now, we got much more independent advisory board members and fewer officials from the department. So going forward, this matter will be as improperly addressed. The corporate audit qualification, I've spoken about that extensively in my opening statement here. Okay, just the financial information. This is directly out of the annual report. So the net surplus of 12 million rand compared to 15 million rand the previous year. So I think maybe we should go into interrogate this a bit more closely. I thought we should do a comparison to the previous year. Our compensation of employees increased from 28 million from 20 to 20 million. This was largely because I think we capacitated the institution better. Our operating expenses increased. Here, during the year, I think, and I indicated that the consolidation had taken place. We are putting in new IT systems, and some of this related, some of these expenses related to that. I thought our audit cost was extremely high. I don't believe for an institution of this size, the audit cost should have been that high. I think that's also as a result of some of our processes and systems within the institution. I believe that where we are right now and where we are going, that those costs will be reduced substantially. The capacity building grants we've mentioned, that's what we targeted and that's what we dispersed. The capital assets, this was the IT system that we were going to put in place, and a lot of it has not been finalized by financial year end, and I'll talk about that towards the end of the presentation already, and the on-lending fund I spoke about. Then, yeah, I thought it would be useful to split the cost and something that I alluded to in the strategy session between the head office and the provincial offices. The total cost for the provincial office is 40 million and the head office is 31 million. I'd say the compensation of employees, you'll see it's very similar. What we've done is we've done an exercise at the head office to look at the capacity, to look at the work that people were actually doing. We had warm bodies, but I don't know whether there was proper leadership given in terms of the work. So I just want to report to this committee that as of the end of, in fact, last week, we had seconded 5 people to the Economic Development Department. And I think it's something that I spoke about at the strategy session. And this was done with intensive work being done in terms of the work analysis that was in the institution. This is at the head office. So the head office cost is going to come down. You're also going to find that the operational cost is going to come down substantially because a lot of the work in terms of consultants has been finalized. The IT project has essentially been completed. That has been paid off. So you're going to find that when you report at the end of the financial year, that those costs will come down. But we are doing an ongoing process. We're looking at efficiencies and effectiveness within the institution. Chair, now I thought I should put this on the table because this is also an issue. You will see that our budget in terms of the capacity building grant and the on-lending fund differs from what was in our strategy document. And I found this really strange. This was what's in the financial system, and this is what was reported on. But all of this, in fact, what we had done is we had reviewed the budget as of the end of last month, and it had just been approved by Economic Development Department. We ensured that it was aligned to the strategy for this year, and we also did a rationalization in our budget. So the budget, the revised budget that we have for this current financial year takes care of all of the issues that we have here. But you will see there are large deviations from the budget. I think just the budgeting process probably needed a bit of refinement. In fact, it needed a lot of refinement. and we have gone through that process. And going forward, I think we now have our processes in place that will take care of this. Okay, then our cash and cash equivalents, I thought maybe we should just maybe highlight that. Even though we had a huge surplus, I think, in fact, it's not the large percentage of those funds. I would say that probably about 40 to 50 million has been committed as at the end of the last financial year. But we keep it at a reserve bank, which government utilizes if when they require. So we don't keep the money lying around in commercial banks. Obviously, the interest rate is minimal, but it's not an issue for the organization itself. But I would also say that in terms of where we want to go to, we are setting the foundation in this financial year to ensure that we massify what we do as SMF. And I believe we can achieve that. With your help, with the help of the financial intermediaries, some of the forums that we put in place, I believe that when we come to report, not probably at the end of the next financial year, but to the subsequent financial year, I think we'll probably as an institution done that much better than we have done. You'll see here that the loans, we are 32 million, but the impairment is just a provision that we make, where we think that it might be uncollectible. Now, and a lot of this relates to the initial years where we had disbursed loans. Then here, the issue of equity within the organization, you'll see that the African, we have more females than males, 32 to 19. I think that probably should be 50-50. But obviously we work towards that. There was one Asian male, there's still one with me acting now. At the end of the financial year there was one. And in terms of color, we had three females, two males, and white, three females, one male. Training and development, at the end of the financial year, as I indicated, we put a plan in place. We had identified people to go on training. All of that training we have done. Managers have gone on intensive training at the University of Pretoria. We had a corporate governance training recently, PFMA corporate governance training at the Pretoria office, with mostly the administrative staff. That's going to be rolled out to the managers. We are sending managers on, PricewaterhouseCoopers is having a King 3 training session. All of our managers will be attending that. The staff turnover rate, and I guess probably this is good for the institution, we can now work on this in terms of improving the capacity of the staff in the institution, was 1.3%. Now, Chair, the financial misconduct, we've spoken about that. I think we could have done a bit more and much sooner in terms of our disciplinary action, but I think we had some challenges in terms of our conduct. I think it was just a humane thing that we had done. We couldn't take action against particularly two individuals because of their illness. Then, Chair, the institution went through a project called Bokomoso. It identified all of the areas that we needed intensive and extensive intervention. It was organization, design and structure. The balanced scorecard was essentially performance management. Talent management, I think the performance management and the balanced scorecard ties up to each other. And then I think at the time, management actually had identified change management as an issue because they had predicted that there were going to be huge changes in the institution, there's going to be discomfort, and that's the issue that I reported on now. We're busy implementing some of that. But Chair, in terms of our technology, I just want to say that we have implemented a new financial system last year. I think now we have stabilized the financial system. We have put in place the asset management, which commenced last year. We are in the process of finalizing it. We hope by the end of November that will be finalized. So our assets are taken care of. Then we have a vendor relationship management system. That is effectively a supplier database management system where we have our procurement processes, the idea to where we have a rotation of service providers, and our DE targets are met. And obviously, the coordinating the DE targets. Then, here we put in place a workflow process for procurement. Added to that, and which is not reflected here, we have identified a system we hope to become effective 1st of December this year. Anything that comes into the institution will be recorded. Be it a piece of paper, be it inquiry, anything that comes into the institution. And it will be directed to specific individuals who, once they have completed it, will record on the system when they have completed it. And if there's anything that needs to be recorded against that any deviations will be recorded. So we will have reports on a weekly basis out of that, reflecting our turnaround times in the institution. Obviously, we will have that audited on an ongoing basis, because people could misuse the system. They could reflect it as having closed off on it when they haven't. But we have communicated to them that will be treated in a more serious way. In fact, it will be treated as fraud. So come in the next financial year, we will be happy to report that we have a system in place that will manage our turnaround time at the institution. So I did indicate that we think that our supply chain management process performed satisfactorily. The few incidents that we reported were outside the process, unfortunately, and obviously we're dealing with that. But what we're also doing is we're putting in place regular training sessions, information sessions. We also utilize that in the DTR, because I come from there. We have a monthly session. We'll be also utilizing that, because it's on the same campus, to be able to inform our staff of the policy and procedures. And we like to utilize the same policies and procedures anyway. Then, Chair, these are all the committees that we have in place. We have an advisory board. We have a very well-functioning audit committee. In fact, right now, we have a very well-functioning credit committee that's working well. We have a risk management committee. I must tell you that the risk management committee, we had a few issues around that, because we had external people managing that before. We have now insourced it. We think we'll do well going forward. We put our system and processes in place. Then we have the rules, regulations, supervision, and stabilization committee. This deals largely with FSCs. Then we have our EXCO. We have a tender internal audit function. Our internal audit function outsourced, but because it's a small organization, we don't believe that insourcing it would probably be the best way to go. Here, the challenges, and these are some of the challenges I reported previously. It's appropriate skill leadership and accountability. I think the issue of accountability is critical. It's not only people being accountable, but holding them accountable for what they do. And I think we've started the process with some of the disciplinary action that we've taken against officials within organizations. Lack of skills within the microfinance sector, the sustainability of FI. This is going to be a big issue that we're paying a lot of attention to going forward, assisting the FI. So what I'm going to say is that we are employing 14 interns that will be deployed in the provinces. In fact, they'll be employed in the provinces to help the FI. I spoke about turnaround times. I spoke about cumbersome systems and processes. We're busy reviewing our credit policy and all our other policies within the institution. We've actually started the process of the credit policy. It's now to be finalized and to go to the credit committee for approval. Ineffective reporting and performance management systems. I've spoken about that, some of the initiatives we've taken around that. A profit margin for startups is small. That is an issue. That's why I spoke about the support. It needs to be between 5 and 10 years. It can't be between 2 and 3 years. And then we litigate against the institution. What I think Kula referred to, from cradle to the grave, that is the kind of process we've been adopting. That's why we have this huge write-off. I think we need to work with the institution, understand what their challenges are. Then the issue of deposit taking insurance. We are talking to the National Treasury on this. We are not entitled to actually have that insurance, but we work with the National Treasury to see. Because we are now accrediting institutions to take deposits, and these are public funds. We've got to make sure as a government that these funds are safeguarded. And then I think the challenges in some of the provinces, likely because of the socio-economic condition, I think the Northern Cape probably the state of the community is an issue, but we intend working intensely. We just started the process now, so we haven't got much to report on that. But going forward, we will. And then here, at the end, is some of the acronyms that we utilize in this process, in this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Naidu. By the way, when did you start your acting?
Here, on the 1st of July. But I think because I was largely involved with DTI and SMF, I was working the financial station at DTI at the same time. So July, 5th of July, 6th.
Okay. Before I allow members, I just want to ask if you see a need for some of the discussions.
Okay, in fact, you know, when I was sitting on the other side of the fence, I was not so convinced that there's a need for time off. The more I interact with the FI, the more I interact with the community they serve, I'm absolutely convinced there's a need for time off. I think the issue of paying specific attention to that sector, giving them the support that is required. If you take time out, but I think it's an engagement that we need to have an ongoing engagement. Maybe my eyes will be opened a bit more. Maybe I'll see a bit more of the light as I engage with the community. But where I sit right now, I've become a bit more and more convinced that we need to work intensely with these communities to ensure that we build sustainable microfinance institutions. I don't believe that as a unit of any other institution that it will give the kind of focus that is required and as an institution that is on its own. But that is my initial assessment. I think we can engage on this further.
Thanks, Mr. Nigel. Colleagues? Here is the report. Thank you for your openness and also for really presenting this report. May I then give members the opportunity to ask questions? Mr. Murray, Mr. Julie, any other Dr. Huang? Yeah, and then others.
Thank you very much. Chairperson. I've got mixed feelings on this report, really mixed feelings. You know, if I first look at the challenges, then I said to myself, you've mentioned quite a number of times that you don't know where this information comes from. Now, the credibility of the information most surely is a challenge, and it hasn't been mentioned yet. And to me, it is quite clear that the credibility of the evidence and the information that we've got is absolutely in doubt. You know, there's quite a number of times that you said, you don't know where this is coming from, you don't know how they got it to that. So there's no explanation. And it means that, you know, on which of these can you actually bargain and on which not? So it is really a problem. I must say to you that the explanation in terms of first of all, the irregular expenditure, it seems like it's a very soft approach to irregular expenditures. And, you know, whether someone is on leave or not, you know, to let the stand over till whenever, I don't think it's very responsible. And hopefully King III will tell you that in terms of corporate governance that shouldn't be like that. In terms of material impairments, part of the qualifications, I am very, very concerned personally about that, because if you look at the annual report, and if you see that the amount for the year is just over 6 million, and you compare that to the total loans of 32 million, that means it's a huge percentage. But if you look at in the annual report, there was a provision of 14.7 million rand impairment. So somehow it has started off, and you've said, you know, we're going to lose money. There's no ways that we're not going to lose money, we're going to lose a major lot of money. In fact, the provision is close to 30% or 50% of the total loans. So that makes for huge doubt about the financial intermediaries. And in your report, you've mentioned that, you know, you've exceeded the target of 8, and you have now 11 financial microfinance intermediaries. So it's not a lot of debtors on your book, if I can call it that. And if there's a so huge risk on so few intermediaries, what will happen if there's quite a number? Because it is surely and maybe you must tell us, you know, the staff at SAMOF, what kind of staff do you employ? What kind of requirements in terms of knowledge and skills do you need? Because you've also mentioned more than once that in terms of capacity building of staff, but also intermediaries, there was a 26 million rand, if I'm correct, disbursed or granted, 26 million to two FIs for capacity building. So you've invested 26 million and you've immediately provided for impairments of 14.7 million rand. So that's quite a huge investment in FIs. And surely, if anyone can just be an FI and say, you know, give me money, I want to lend that out to whoever, surely there must be some procedure how you sift and how you go through, possible FIs as partners of someone. Maybe you must elaborate a bit on that, because otherwise I am not so sure that one can really bargain on any of the information in this. On the one hand, you mentioned that the problem is the IT system, but then one also see that in 2010, not a lot has been spent on IT, and it seems like it is majority has been spent between the beginning of this year and now. Although we see that in the previous financial year, 2.2 million was spent on IT, and this year probably about 570,000 rand. So there's quite a lot of information that doesn't balance up to me. You know, you get the impression of the one thing, then other information comes, you say, hey, now it's give a car. So maybe you can elaborate and make give more clarity in my mind of the viability of SAMR, because at this stage I've got huge doubt whether there's any justification for an organization of this performance nature. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think there are so many figures here that if you haven't done that, you become a bit confused. Particularly, you've got percentage targets. How do you measure this percentage? How do you know that? Because now you just say 40% of what, how does that come from? You just say 40%, if you can elaborate and say we are measuring this percentage, if you want this from that, maybe you will be able to understand. On page 20, this is page 3, you said you've got FIs, 51 FIs, and 160,611 beneficiaries, which benefited from this 76 million. We want to check how many are sustainable, particularly these FIs, which you can say you have developed them or they are sustainable. Because this number, this 160, we are not sure whether they just benefited and what happened. And you said in March this year, you had an evaluation project which was sent to the accounting office. What are the outcomes of that evaluation project? Chair, we are told here that most of the clients or the beneficiaries of SAMR were retrenched during the financial crisis. I want to check whether SAMR did any awareness to the beneficiaries about the training layoff scheme, because I believe this department, we were responsible to disperse billions to save jobs. Now we are saying here most of your beneficiaries were retrenched. So now we want to check whether they were aware of this training layoff scheme, which the department was trying to prevent the retrenchment. We were told that there are 27 microfinance institutions
on page 27, if you can maybe name few, okay, because we've got this number and we've got 24 financial services cooperatives. And if you can just mention where are they? Where are they? Lastly, Chair, is the we were told that there are 13 vacant posts which have not been filled, and we want to find out whether those posts have been filled. I know that you said they are interns, about 14 interns. I'm not sure whether those interns are filling those positions or just interns in case. But you said you've got, according to the report, annual report, they are saying there are 13 vacant positions which have not been filled, and want to find out why or how far with those positions, with those vacancies. And then this target, and we are not sure this money, how much money was given to you by the department from the onset on the internship. We know that we have used 76 million, but how much was there from the onset, and how much do you need, and how many employees, or I would say establishment, how many do you need so that you can be able to be confident that no, we are on the job? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, of course, we appreciate for some of our presentation. I think just due to the comprehensive to this question for this beneficiary for the page 3. I think the page 3 is indicated for this beneficiary about for the 16.06.11 is the beneficiary. It's a cover for 76.1 million rand. I think this is the ground and the loan. Then from your presentation, page 10, your slide is slide 10. You say it's due to this 51 FIS directly benefiting 35,000. 8044, but only cover for the 49.8 million. So I want to know from these two information, I want to know, can you explain which one is correct one? Then the Chairperson, for the regarding for the challenge, I think that it's a challenge in the province due to the social economy conditions. I think that from his report is he has the total sum of 61 employees. Then I think it's over the 34 is deployed to the I think all the problems. So from the report, it didn't clear say what problem for this social economic competition or challenging for the your each problem. Especially for you highlighted for your problem. So what happened? What is the problem? Can you get more detail for us? And the last question is the Chairperson regarding the risk. It's a slide for the risk. This attendance meeting is your only 25% is the result in the leg because no call. I don't understand why is only 25% people attended the meeting. What's problem for this issue? Because it is it's under the majority 51%. So I don't know this leadership what the problem. And the write off here, like the Comrade Turi said, how you can get this target of 50%? You want to write off? Then now you target now is actually you have the 17% for the write off. Because if from your page 43 for this number 6 long, is the last one is utilized during the year is 6.1 million. Yeah? This one you will be writing off. You will be writing off if you sold this on page 50. Page 50, you put this one is irregular expenditure. I don't know, it's from 2009, it's only for 9,000. Then it's not just past 1 year, you jump to the 6.5 million. I like this one, can get a more explained detail from the thing.
Thanks, Dr. Wang. Thank you, Chair. My question is this, as with regards to the auditor's report on leadership, that the summer fund did not adequately address the processes pertaining to planning, monitoring, and reporting of financial and performance information at the overall performance management level, and that SAMAF did not have sufficient monitoring controls to ensure the compliance with all applicable laws and regulations and internal control. So how do you see SAMAF in future? Do you think there is existence of SAMAF in future? Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Naidu, I am really not, I wish I had your optimism, but I don't. After this presentation, I really feel there's something that is not going right. I find Mr. Marin's issue around credibility of the info and also of the evidence as presented, because you know, when the presenter is not sure what he's saying, is not convinced, then I think we as recipients of the information, clearly, you cannot expect us to be convinced also of what you say. Moreover, that you also state in your challenges similar, you know, issues that brought the situation where it is. And I don't see anything that might bring about a drastic turnaround within. Like I said, I just want to thank you for your openness. But you see, your remedial issues also, I mean, I don't know whether we understand Auditor General's information, matters of emphasis. Because if the Auditor General's opinion are not taken seriously, I mean, that's an opinion. It means how serious is the issue. And you see, you're still waiting for the person to come back from the accouchment leave so we can take action. The other one, you just gave a written final warning. I mean, what type of action is that? I mean, when there is evidence in place, especially from the Auditor General, we cannot act like that, Mr. Knight. Hence, I questioned the existence of summer three, because you seem not to be having what it takes to exist. This institution is 5 years old, you said, and yet it's not learning from experiences. You have fully functioned, you have outsourced audit committee, internal audit unit. Why? And you have exorbitant, expenditure on this particular audit, on audit fees. And yet, you cannot produce. Why do we pay more than 3 million? Is there value for money? And before even the Auditor General, you know, issues an opinion, there is a management letter. What happened? Maybe we must ask, what did you do with the audit, with the management letter? Because that is a process that must be taken seriously. Because the Auditor General doesn't just come to that conclusion without engaging the department, the institution. You first engage the institution, provide this information, and yes, Auditor General comes back and says, we could not find information. I mean, non-compliance with regulatory and reporting requirements, that's the last thing. And lack of effective, efficient, and transparent systems and internal controls. You have committees that you pay that are sitting more than four times a day, paid fully. What are we saying about that? I mean, those people should be providing, you know, measures, control measures, so that we don't come to the situation we are in. And moreover, you reported that the people who sit, especially in the advisory committee, are officials. They're supposed to be possessing relevant or required expertise or skills to assist, to advise, and also to be able to check, to see if there are any discrepancies happening. I mean, if we don't have such control measures, then why are we in existence? We might as well, because Kula is doing the same thing, we might as well stop existence and let Kula continue. Because, you know, the brackets in terms of loans, the loan brackets and so forth are equally the same. Because, you know, challenges you also, I mean, in the Auditor General report, he mentions reliability of information. How sure are we of the report that we have here? I mean, just to indicate to you, I'm looking at your slide 11 and 12 in terms of your performance. You're saying the end user rural profile, you targeted 50% and you achieved 75%. But in terms of demographics, please, you don't even mention that. Is there a reason why you don't mention? There's also the women thing. Women versus men there. And then you also look at the percentage spent in terms of your capacity building budget. It's finance. Capacity building versus loan. Look at that. In all provinces except for KwaZulu-Natal, where you've spent 0.25 against 0.12. I mean, that's the only province in the Northwest. Because to me, it's how much you the quality of work that is more important. How much you prepare those people before disbursing any funds. To me, it's very important. And from the look of things, it doesn't look like that is going to change. That's what I'm saying. I wonder whether you, because you're saying here your credit policy has been fully implemented, what does that mean in actual fact? I don't understand. Because yourself as a presenter, you say you're not convinced, you're not sure. Sitting here, I really don't know whether to take you back with this, to recommend that we take you back with this report and await the credible information. I mean, we really demand a better audit, forensic audit, so that we can be sure that we have better information. I mean, you're saying here the tender bidding committee was established in June 2007. There were tender riggings, there were what, but you still continue with the same committee. How often do you change that bid committee as per the requirements of the PFMA and its regulations? and whether this BITCOM is doing everything, because in terms of the regulations and, or requirements, procurement requirements, it's supposed to have three different committees dealing with this, with procurement. And here you mention only one. And I'm really having a problem with that. You have a risk management committee that was established in February 2008. What risk are they looking at? What are they managing? Risks are they managing when the situation is like this? I mean, those are some of the issues that I have a problem with, that I feel, because you said you have things, you know, now ready to turn around. But you're still continuing with the same people to their account. Why the situation is as it is, I don't know. But I'm just worried about this. You've got a qualified report and serious to me in terms of serious issues that you need to deal with. And I feel like that's losing over in terms of remedial issues. Actions that you're supposed to be taking. Some of these issues, because even if you say so many people benefited, I'm not sure whether I should believe that or what. Yeah, let me give you an opportunity to respond and hear whether one will be convinced as well. You have colleagues, Mem Beu and Mem Ngeu and Mr. Hulani. Perhaps you should assist, because you have people inside dealing with HR issues. How many issues came before you for disciplinary? I don't know whether you deal with you're saying human resource executive, Mem Ngeu. I don't know what does that mean. There are human resource management issues, there are human resource development issues. I don't know whether you deal with both, but these are some of the issues. The COO, Chief Operations Officer, perhaps you should also assist us, because you are very keen, the institution. Looking at the picture now, what are you saying? Mr. Naidu is only less than five months in the institution. You should be really accounting to us, because the situation as it is not pleasant. You want to come in before they come in?
Come again?
Okay. Let me hand over to Mr. Naidu.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the questions. Let me start with the credibility of the information. Now, in the areas, and in fact, if you look at the information, in the areas where I thought that the information was not credible, I indicated. And if you look at that overall, it's not the major part. It's largely relating to areas where you needed to do some kind of a survey. Now, I don't believe the institution had the mechanism to do that survey. That is why I indicated that this financial year we put in place a mechanism where we can do this. And you see, all of those who I indicated, I'm not sure about the information, because largely dealing with percentages. I also had difficulty with percentages. I'd rather have numbers rather than percentages. But I think the information where you deal with the disbursements, the number of AFIs, the number of favors, I think we can be fairly sure that information is credible. So up front, and I indicated to the committee where I thought the areas where it was not credible. And you see, in relation to the whole, and that's why I said, I think the organization did themselves a disfavor when they set themselves those targets, because they never had instruments. And I don't believe during the year they would actually have in place those instruments. But what we have done in this financial year, when we reviewed the strategy, we said, okay, let's take one chunk at a time. So the first thing we did is we deal with the intermediaries. We want an independent assessment done so we can report correctly. What we've also done in terms of turnaround times, we're putting systems in place to make sure that we can report correctly to this committee. But sir, let me just say that we take the Auditor General's report, we take this committee absolutely. Maybe I didn't come across correctly to the committee. We take it absolutely seriously, ma'am. I must just say that the issue where we had not taken action, it was a person who was in an advanced stage of maternity, and she actually gave birth 3 days ago, and in fact she was having complications. That is the only thing I took into consideration. I must tell you, with respect to the CFO, we can have an internal discussion, chair, an in-committee discussion, and I'll tell you how seriously I have taken the matter. But a couple of days after I had the discussion, she had gone to hospital. So I couldn't attend to the matter until she got back. But I can tell you, I took it absolutely seriously. And you will see the kind of interventions I've put in place for those in the few months that I've been there. I take financial management absolutely seriously. So I can assure the committee, from where I sit, you can be assured that we will. And that's why I said there's serious discomfort in the organization some employees take. And that's why I now take on staff, because I believe it was wasting public funds if you kept people in an organization where they don't have sufficient work to do. So I can assure this committee that I take the Auditor General's report seriously. I take all of the issues that they raise. Now, the issue of the management letter. The management letter comes with the Auditor General's report. And Chair, maybe we can send that information to the committee. What we've done, we've created a matrix where people are responsible for the action that needs to be taken against the weakness that was identified. And we're monitoring that on a monthly basis. So that information, so we take the Auditor General absolutely seriously. And as I indicated to this committee, we take them so seriously that I'm saying to this committee that when we come and report next time to this committee, we will have probably an unqualified audit report. It's not an unqualified audit report. So we take that information seriously. Then, Chair, with respect to performance, maybe I should go to each of I spoke about the credibility of the information. Then the issue of irregular expenditure. See, the issue of the irregular expenditure, now related to the last issue that you raised, you see, we have a good tender committee that deals with matters over 500,000 rand. But the issue of the irregular expenditure here had no relation to the good committee or the internal procurement section. It was staff who went outside that process and procured. So the staff within the organization didn't even know at the time. But what we also did was we ensured when the payment was made that the institution got value for money. But those issues, when the individual comes back here, in fact, it's a marketing person, we will be dealing with it as firmly as we can. And in fact, we can give the committee a report back as soon as we've done that, once we've dealt with that item. Then the issue of material impairment. See, I indicated that, you know, when we had, in fact, the issue of the impairment in the report is a provision. So it's not a write-off. When the institution was first established, and you will see that a substantial amount of loans were given in the first year. If you go to slide number 14, you will see that we dispersed 19.8 million rand in total, and the loans dispersed were 9.1 million rand of it. And the year thereafter, the loans dispersed was 18 million rand. So 27 million rand of that was dispersed on page 14 of the slide. Yes. Oh, sorry. You've got slide 14. It's a slide here. So you see that 27 million rand, and I believe that, and without trying to make an excuse, the belief was the institution was in the learning phase at that time. But what the Auditor General, together with the institution, believed that it was prudent to provide for this, where we've not collected. But the institution is continuously engaging in collecting those funds. The requirements for staff employment. See, I must just say in the finance department, I think that the requirements were quite stringent, but I think what had happened was in terms of qualifications stringent, but in terms of experience, maybe the institution was done in this favor because a lot of youngsters had been employed without being given proper guidance. So maybe the discussion about the chief financial officer we should have, Chair, to indicate what I have indicated to the chief financial officer, what I think should be done. But since our comments and the finance section has been given direction, I indicated that things have improved substantially if I may say so myself, it might be subjective, but I think the proof is in the eating when the Auditor General does
that the audit. But I can give this committee that assurance. I've been at the DTI for a long time, and the finance for the DTI have been. I'm trying to implement a similar kind of system at SMF. See, the percentage targets, I agree that in certain instances that we shouldn't be using percentage targets, but where it relates to a total, percentage targets are probably appropriate. But maybe we should also include numbers at the same time. So we've corrected that in the strategy. I think there are still some areas, I think the chair indicated when we present the strategy session that we should include targets. So when we do report on the strategy, we'll also put numbers rather than percentages against that. Then the issue of sustainable FIs and the capacity building, and I also want to relate this to what the chair said, that I'm also of that view, and I think the executive around the table here from CEMAC is also of the view that, and I think it was a learning process, that we should be spending more money on capacity building within the institution before we start on lending. That's why we started a process where we do it concurrently. We see at what stage, in fact, we're starting the process now, we haven't started it, at what stage the institution is at, what capacity building requirements is needed, and then relate that to what loans we can give them, whether they can manage it. So we're starting the process now, unfortunately. It should have been done much earlier. Yeah. I'm still convinced that it needs to come up. But we'll discuss that. This is the evolution project, the accounting office. I'm assuming you're referring to the evaluation of the institution and where they submitted a revised structure to the accounting officer. That has been put on hold because the institution moved to the Economic Development Department. And the minister, together with the DG, they're doing an assessment of where CEMAC should be. Like the questions you raised, they're raising very similar questions. Or whether CEMAC should be sitting on its own, or whether it should be sitting within CULA, or what kind of structure we require. So that's why they're giving me the space until the end of the financial year to see what we can achieve as an institution. In fact, see, I must say that when I go to the minister, asked me the first thing, what is your turnaround strategy? What are you going to do? What are some of the key things that you're going to do in the institution to turn it around? His word was the turnaround strategy. So he also saw the kind of things that you are seeing in the institution. Beneficiaries retrench, the awareness of training, awareness programs, maybe my colleagues will comment on that. I was not in the institution at the time, but I do know that they had outreach programs together with the DTI. So I'm assuming that together with the DTI, they probably communicated the awareness programs on the reskilling training issues. The 13 vacant posts that have not been filled, see, I think that was done deliberately because they knew they were moving, the institute was moving to a new department, a new structure was being proposed to the new department. That structure has not been approved as yet. But what we have started doing is started filling the key service delivery positions in the provinces particularly, while we're doing the assessment at the head office in terms of the administrative staff requirements. I think we've done that at the head office. I don't believe that we require any additional staff at the head office. I think the provinces probably require additional staff. That's why I spoke about the interns. The 13 year does not relate to the 14 interns. The 14 interns are open above the certain vacant positions. The 14 interns are going to do two things. They're going to firstly address the issue of providing employment for youth, even though it's a small number. But secondly, to also provide assistance to our FIs, our financial intermediaries, on an ongoing basis. The issue of the socio-economic challenge, see, I think probably the easiest province to relate it to is the issue of the size of the province and the number of people that we have to service the province. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is that communities have not been exposed as probably maybe Gauteng or Western Cape or KZN to these kind of interventions. So what we need to do, we need to make the institution more of make the community more aware of what CEMAC can do. I think those are the kind of issues, and I think also the issue of I'll say education level, but I think it's probably harsh, but I think the education level of communities maybe in the West, probably the rural communities and those kinds, but I think we need to work at that to be able to see the opportunities that this can create for them. The attendance at meetings, Chair, the issue was that we had officials that sat on the, particularly the advisory board, and it's based with the advisory board, but those officials that resigned from the department, and the replacement thereof took a while And that is why they had a problem with attendance at meetings. And that is why meetings could not take place because you didn't have sufficient number of people. In fact, the independent people were available. But the officials from the DTI who had resigned, they're replacing them took a little while. And that was the issue there. Just making sure that I'm covering most of the issues. Then the issue of, I've spoken about the write-off compared to the impairment. The write-off was 3 million rand, I think, for the financial year concerned. And the impairment is essentially a provision. But we are working really hard to make sure, even those institutions that we've provided for, that we work with them to capacitate them, to make sure they're up and running again. See, I must say that, before I go there, that legal action has been taken against some of those institutions, and I didn't believe that was the right way to go. In fact, you would kill the institution. So we're revisiting those institutions to understand what the problem is. Because they're still alive and they're running. All we needed to do is to see a system to collect the money from the end users and how we can build a system. If we take legal action, we're going to kill those institutions. So we're also in that process of addressing that. So the issue of the leadership planning, monitoring, and performance information, the issue here is, I think, the system of gathering the information, particularly from the FI, was probably challenging during the financial year. And maybe my colleagues can talk about that a bit more. This was the performance management system that just been implemented in the institution. I think it began the year before, but it was being institutionalized within, and it was problematic because staff needed to understand what those issues were. And anyway, the AG's office has also given an opportunity to organizations to make sure that the systems are right. So what they've been doing now, they've been progressively reporting. I think they first started the previous year, they started the management letter. Then they started including that in the audit report as emphasis of matter. The next time around, they're going to now utilize this as a qualification. So they've given institutions to make sure that their systems are in place. It's a challenge, I think, at some level, and I believe that probably in government that it's a challenge. You find a lot of, I've looked at the audit report, you'll find that a similar kind of thing arises. But I think at some level we're probably getting that right now over the past few months. We put the systems in place to ensure that we revisited our planning, so we redid our strategy. In terms of monitoring, we're putting in place the quarterly reports where we're now having the managers to come in a forum, now to account and also indicate what mechanism they have in place to support the information. And the third thing we're doing is we're doing our half-yearly review, chairperson, audit of the performance information. So our internal auditors will go out there and audit the performance information and make sure that they're supporting evidence for all of the performance information that's available. I've spoken about the action against employees here. I must again re-emphasize that I am personally very serious about that. I take financial management very seriously. I want to assure this committee that the next time, and in fact, once we've taken the action, we will report to the committee what action we've taken. The issue of the outsource of internal audit, yeah, indicated that the SMF is a bit small to maybe create. In fact, what we try to do is to get to partner with DTI, but I think DTI is too big to be able to perform the internal audit function. So that function is to outsource. But I think that, in fact, I'm convinced that the external audit fees are extremely high for a number of reasons. I think the institutions didn't have its mechanism in place to be able to give the auditors what they require timely, or give the information that was totally accurate the first time around. I think we've now
resolved that. Just a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
You know, that particular matter, I don't think it's satisfactorily attended to. I mean, you can't say they were not given information. Is there anything that supports what you're saying in writing from the auditors? Because if you outsource the internal audit is supposed to be dealing with risk issues, with all those matters that are posing a threat to the department's functioning. They're supposed to be helping the department to identify those issues. And you can't say that the SAMAC was supposed to give them information. What did they say in return to support what you are saying, so that we can gain the value for money for the work that they've done? And what did the audit committee say in return? Because it's supposed to be, they've met. You've given us reports that they were meeting every four times a year. So I just want you to really give us a favorable response, or else, because your response indicates to me that things are not going to turn around any sooner.
Okay, so what you've done, like the internal audit, you do give out a report at the end of each audit. Like we've done for the external audit, we've also put together a matrix. We put people that are going to be responsible. We put due dates by when they have to deliver in terms of rectifying the weaknesses that have been identified. So since I started, we put that in place. And we review that on a monthly basis. I could also share that information with this particular committee. So we've addressed that issue in terms of the reports from the external auditors. I'm not sure, Chair, whether I've answered your question, or the issue of the value for money in terms of the auditors. Maybe I need a little bit more time to do that assessment. I've not done specifically that assessment, but what I can say is that the reports that they've given have been valuable in terms of implementing processes and systems.
Continue with our response.
Say the issue of the committees, maybe I should have, I mean, it's a thing that I've probably said to our executive, maybe I should say it to you. Say that I think the audit committee works well. I think they give good direction to the advisory board. I don't know whether I can make any pronouncement. I think I've been there too few. They've only had one meeting since I've been there, yeah?
But your colleagues are there. They must respond.
Okay.
Especially the COO and the HR person.
Okay.
Give them the opportunity, because you were only here for less than 5 months. Give them that opportunity, because the report under review is during their term. They were there. Give them that opportunity.
Okay. I will defer. Can I finish the rest of the chair before
okay.
I defer that way? Chair, I just want to say I can understand the committee's frustrations in terms of this report. I had the same frustrations when I first started. In fact, putting together the report was quite a challenging aspect. But I think in terms of the reliability of the information, I have focused on the areas where I think that maybe that needs a bit of interrogation. And if you look at the report substantially, Chair, I think that a lot of the information you can rely on. I focus on the areas where I think you can't rely on them. So I'm not sure where, because this is historical information that has been audited by the auditors. They've given their views on it. I've given my views on it. I think maybe what we should do is give this committee some kind of assurance, and maybe we need to interact a bit more, even not at a committee level. Maybe we can at CEMEP or maybe at our financial intermediaries. So how are we getting all of this information together? I can assure you we put systems in place to make sure that we have adequate information going forward. Reliability, okay. Yeah, the issue of the credit policy fully implemented, when I made the distinction, see, they split the issue of reading the credit policy, which was done 100%, and then the issue of implementing the credit policy. What I indicated was that the credit policy was reviewed very late in the financial year. Okay, and when they implemented it, they couldn't say they implemented it 100% because it wasn't applicable to the full financial year. But it was just a review only. But for the period that it was reviewed and approved, it has been fully implemented. So that was the point I was trying to make around the credit policy. Then the issue of tenders here. Let me just say, because CEMEP, the size of CEMEP, I can't tell you offhand exactly how many items went to the tender committee for the year under review, but there isn't many that goes to the tender committee, because most of it is 100,000-500,000 rand. But sitting here, maybe what we should do is not use the treasury regulation. Maybe we work within the treasury regulation, but say 200,000 rand or 100,000 rand that goes to the tender committee. However, we have a procurement section that looks at all of the procurement that comes through before an order is issued to the service provider. They quality check all of that. We have a database that is rotational, so there's no preferential treatment given to any service provider. The database is rotational based on what the requirements are. And in fact, it's the procurement section that advises the users which service providers are going to be rotated, and they have access to the database.
So we do it on those bases. So all of those systems are in place within the institution. So the risk management committee, when I started at CEMAS, they did have a risk management process in place. They've identified the risk, they put actions in place, but it was being managed by an external service provider. And like I think probably the internal audit function, the outsource review discomfort, this also gave me a discomfort. In fact, that arrangement has been terminated. I have personally taken that within my office to manage the risk. So immediately I started, we've done an assessment on the strategic risk for this organization. We put in place some of the interventions that need to be put in place. We are addressing the strategic risk. We've already got an operational risk register. We already have an operational risk register where we have interventions in place. Our next meeting of the risk committee is on the 1st of November for the last quarter. We have that on a quarterly basis. So we've taken care of that. There's no more outsourcing, it will be managed internally. I believe that should be managed internally. So I'm going to defer.
So you're saying it's no longer outsourced?
No.
So their services were terminated when? And can we have a proof of that?
Yes, in fact, I will send you the email that was sent to me by the service provider because it wasn't a pleasant email that was sent by the service provider. I was just uncomfortable with the banning was operating. In fact, I think it was either July or August. I can send you proof of that.
We need that proof. Okay. Just before other officials respond, I don't know whether Mr. Wenyama has a question. You had an
issue? Yes. No, I was really battling, like all of us. And mine was actually moving from the mandate, which is the basis of everything that follows. And I was actually saying that support for the establishment of sustainable microfinance institutions that can lead deeper and broader to the enterprising poor. And I was actually asking myself, as I was reading through this, if in all senses you are told, as we are sitting here, that the people of Eastern Cape, which is the third biggest province in the country in terms of numbers, and the poorest province of this country, has got zero, nothing. Nothing on disbursement, nothing on capacity building, no loans, in terms of what we have here, performance by province. And yet we sit here with a mandate that talks about frustration of the enterprising poor. What is the basis of SAMAF? I'm not at the level of all the technicalities. I'm at the level of the mandate myself, which comes back to your question right from the beginning. What is the basis of the existence of SAMAF? Is there any basis for the existence of SAMAF? If the people of Northern Cape, you can say not, just like that. It's one of the poorest provinces also in the country. If the people of Northwest, you can come up with that point, not five. I mean, in all senses, not to the third biggest and the most poorest province of the country, is the game. Nothing. What is the basis then? I'm more or less myself at that level, at the level of the mandate. And, you know, Chair, I'm reading through. I'm not a very, very good English speaker. But I'm reading through the mandate and vision and all that. The language used here, the formulations used, I must say that I'm not impressed. Because when you talk about the mandate and visions and all that, they must be very, very clear and very crisp so that when you talk about evaluation at the end of the day, you are able to evaluate. Not this kind of language which is written here, in my own view. For an organization which is supposed to serve the poor people. Well, I may be wrong, and maybe this is an in-think. I mean, these languages, I'm not sure myself. And so we can go through each and every page in terms of these graphs and what have you. Slightly confusing as well. The way they are packing your graphs, they are not a simple graphs. You know, we had the graphs coming from Kula the other day. They used the simple models and these pie charts or pie graphs, which were very, very simple for people to understand. Especially because I suppose these reports are also meant for consumption of the very end user, which is the poor people. Whether they'll be able to grapple with this kind of, this is the language that I'm talking about, end of this document. Besides that, the quality of the document is having a very, very big question mark. Many spelling mistakes in a document which is coming from a government, and it's coming from an institution which is supposed to be having the best capacity. And they also talk about capacity building in the process. And many spelling mistakes in the quality of the document. You know, I was actually startled when, if we turn to yearly performance comparison disbursement, I'm not sure whether that maybe it's me. I see target, total dispute, loan dispute, and so on. And is that the correct English? As I actually said, I'm not the best English speaker. It ain't my mother's language. But I'm just pointing out the quality of the document in the first place. Now, but that is secondary. That is very secondary. The issue with me is at the level of the mandate. Needless to go through the Auditor General's report, which actually speaks directly to the points of the mandate that I'm referring to. Planned and reported performance targets not verifiable. The reported targets not valid, accurate, and complete as inadequate supporting source information was provided, and so on and so forth. Lack of effective, efficient, and transparent systems and internal controls regarding performance management, if that is the case, and how much more to the ordinary people? How much more to the ordinary people? That's my take, Madam Chair, that really, I hear everything that Mr. Naidu has actually said. In fact, it was a bit complicated as Moyo was talking, because I'm at a basic level, because I'm at the level of mandate and vision and all that, and mission and values, the integrity, professionalism and all that, and when you go through the document, you don't find that. I'm just saying that, in my view, based on this information in front of us, SAMAS is failing or has failed in its mandate. Thanks, Madam Chair. I really can't really believe it. It is said here there are 34 people that are employed in provinces out of 61, if I'm not mistaken. Do you have people working in the Eastern Cape? Do you have people working in Northern Cape, Northwest, KZN? Are there people working in those provinces? And why do you have only three provinces that seem to be attended?
If you get to IDC at the end of the report, you'll find their provincial contact details. I don't know whether they are provincial acting managers and managers who are paid for those levels. So that's why it is quite difficult really to interact with this document. Yes, coming.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. My first, I think, question is that, of course, I think it's a very technical report, but the one point is that there's an illustration of figures dispersed and all of that, and of course, in some instances, I think as Honorable Ngonyama has indicated, there are no figures dispersed. But what I was going to be, and I think this is what would make a case for SAMAS, is I think the sustainability of where the figures are going to, and maybe it's in the bigger report, if we give an institution 10 million rand and then they disperse 10,000 rand, what happens to the life of those institutions? What are the success stories? Because what I saw is what we've allocated and what were the impairments and all of that. So what is the extent of the success of the enterprises that have been supported? The second thing linked to that, and I think in your language it's called impact assessment. Success of enterprises, but also the extent of jobs or the number of jobs created. I've seen you've calculated somewhere in the slides that have dispersed this number of grants or whatever, and these are the number of people that it has been able to reach out to, and therefore in terms of household impact, etc., in terms of the general trend. But in practical terms, what are, for instance, the number of jobs and all of those things and the sustainability? So that's the second question, and I think those two are linked. But the third question is that if SAMAS is meant to assist the poorest of the poor, and its success rate is in the most urbanized province in the country, and I think still linked to the question that Honorable Ngonyama is raising, it doesn't make sense. It absolutely doesn't make sense for me that the work reflected or the work done significantly is in the province of Gauteng, and where there's obviously a concentration of many other institutions of government that are doing almost the same or have a similar responsibility. And I think it's a major concern. And the third one being the Western Cape. And I think Limpopo, of course, falls in the category of the Eastern Cape, KZN, Northern Cape, but it doesn't exonerate the fact that of the five provinces where there seem to be activity, only one or two, the provinces which are regarded as the most impoverished. So I think it doesn't make any sense. Look, I'm not going to be writing off some of on the basis of the report, because I think there may be a disconnection between the process of putting together this report, and given some of the problems which may have been there, the questions of mandates, the questions of what SAMAS needs to attain, it may be possible that they are not lucidly and succinctly articulated from this report. I'm still keeping that as a possibility, and that it should probably not be on that basis that we say, we need to argue for its relevance, because there are specific things which needs to be done or which which needs the attention. If you say it should focus on the poorest of the poor, I do not think that on the basis of this report and based on what your understanding is of the mandate of the institution, I do not think that you make a good case for the institution. And I still believe that the mandate within which it may have been created may still be existent, and in effect it may actually, the problem may actually be either the capacity of the institution currently to be able to execute that mandate, which may also include understanding what that mandate is. I think that maybe we, over and above engaging with the report and what our ultimate and final attitude would be, that maybe the discussion should be between two things. What was the original mandate? What was it intended to achieve? What has been able to, what has happened to date in ensuring that we work towards that mandate? Because clearly from this report, we do not see that coming out. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Manamela. Mr. William.
No, I just want to give an advice to Mr. Manamela.
To say that it would be advisable that in meetings of this nature, don't attempt to give reasons for something that perhaps you can say, I will go and try to get more information on. Because if you attempt to give, to respond to something that is obviously not true, it is somehow hurting to the listener. That's the advice that I would like to give. I'll just make an example about one thing. You see, he says when he responds on the matters relating to these provinces, maybe it's a question of education, the level of education and the fact that people don't have information. I don't think that is proper. It's definitely hurting because it's an insult actually to those people. It is on that basis that I'm really advising. And in a very, very, and a kind of sober way, and a brotherly, and to say that please let us not make such assumptions.
Thanks, Mr. William. I'll give it to Dr. Wang, but then I would want us to have a break afterwards, just 5 minutes break, and then I'd like members to remain alone and request others to excuse us. So that, and then we'll reconvene afterwards. Dr. Mann?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's why is my colleague is in Goyama is very, very, very like the angry. Because my question is not replied to me regarding for the all this province, this issue. Because I ask him, is equal to 61 is the employee, but the 34 is the deployed to the every province. Substantial from his side, inside we can see 5 provinces, especially very poor province in the Eastern Cape, and Norway, and the Northern Cape. This not allocated to say how is Samafar is called to the assistance to the people, because he showed to us his beneficiary is 35,000 already beneficiary. And spend over 76 million rand, but I don't know where he go to the beneficiary. These are the poor problems. So I remember the first time is some of our meeting. We request where your beneficiary list. They promise to us where we submit to the our secretary. But until now, is 5 months, 6 months passed, we haven't got any information. So I think it's cheaper than you. I wish this one, due to your leadership, I think something must be sorted out. Thanks.
Thanks, Dr. Wang. May we have that 5 minutes break, and after 2 minutes, members can convene on our own.
Hi, this young girl and a young boy, what are you doing here?
No,
no, you don't marry. You here today, no marry, because you meet this
so
man
what?
Always.
There's no young boy in parliament.
So what? No, this is
so
young
honorable member.
Young
honorable member, there are no boys in
honorable
member.
There
are no boys and girls here. This is honorable member.
I don't know. So this is the committee meeting. There is an honorable member. After committee meeting, there is a young girl, young boy.
But the number is not your money.
Tomorrow morning,
it's
good morning,
it's
good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's good morning, it's
I'm sticking with this thing. looking at the staff complement of some of from the beginning,
when summer started, the understanding was that the people who need to mend summer are the people who have got the social skill. And that discounted the financial aspect, the developmental aspect, which SAMHSA is supposed to be dealing with. Because if you are a financial institution without being financially clued up, you will not make it. So the caliber of the SAMHSA staff was based on those social needs, people with absolutely no financial background. This is the reason why last year, the Project Bokamoso, which is SAMHSA of tomorrow, came up with the clear competences of what type of competences some of employees are supposed to be having. The truth of the matter, the reason why we're having that challenge of institutional capacity is the background and the history of the institution. Then I will try and answer the questions as I move on from that background. The first thing which was raised was the credibility of the information which is here. I must say that with me being in SAMHSA for almost 2 years now, I think that I'm seeing the financial records having improved, but I still believe that for this committee to have that proper assurance, I think more time is needed for this committee to go through, because I know that the auditors have gone through the figures as well. But I think the time we have now can never give you that satisfaction for us to interrogate all the figures so that we give you that comfort. But with me being in that company, I know where we are at the moment. Now, going to the AG's report, where there are irregular expenses, and with the people which have been, by the impression, the way it looks like that they were handled not suitable for the penalties which were given to those people, don't seem to be serious enough for an institution which had a qualification. Now, if you look at some of which has been having a technical qualification, not an accounting qualification, nothing wrong in terms of the controls in SAMHSA. It's for the first time that SAMHSA is having a qualification of this nature. All along it has been having technical qualification. Now those employees, we have dealt with them, and the figures, if you look at them, there is no money which has gone to the pockets of the employees. It's a matter where one employee will overpay a supplier by putting an extra zero. Let's say, for argument's sake, the payment was supposed to have been 15,000 and it ends up being 150,000. And that we are following and recouping the money from the debtor itself. Then the employees themselves were in the line of command in terms of authorizing that particular irregular expense. We have gone through all of them and it took necessary steps. The only employee which Mr. Naidu alluded to, the one which was advanced in terms of her expectancy, it was just not being advanced only. She was not well as well. So for us to charge her at that time, what we did, we explained to her that this is the situation and we need to charge you. She knows exactly that she's facing a disciplinary action, but we couldn't do that because with the labor relations, we would have been asked as well what was the least when this person is in this particular situation. And let me move to the second question. The other question here was talking about the type of staff we have. I've already responded on that one. And I will move quickly to the other question which was asked here, that the poorest provinces seem to be having less, and while SAMHSA is looking at serving the poorest of the poor. That challenge, we really admit to that one. That is exactly what is happening there. But I want us to take it in perspective. When you're looking at Western Cape and looking at Gauteng, you are looking at the amount dispersed. Now, the fact that that company in Gauteng is big, like SAP, for example, it will have the capacity of having that big figure. Whereas in Eastern Cape, you'll be having little companies like Bittersweet, like Zibonelini, which will have will not qualify for that bigger amount. That's what makes that disparity. But if you look at the pipelines and the FSCs which are on the pipeline in those provinces, you will see that the impact on those areas, those are the areas we're looking at the moment, which if we're looking, if we judge them by figures, they will look like they are too far. But if you're looking about at what is going on the ground, they are not as far like as you are looking at it at Western Cape and Southern. It's only the volumes of the loans because of the size of the institutions. And I just wanted to take the other questions which were not clear, which might not have been clear when they were asked. The 14 vacant positions. I think the 14 vacant positions, it's not real positions, it's intentions. Now, I think when we were presenting our strategy session, we alluded to the fact that SAMAF does not have competences it requires. By those intents, we are building that skills base. Because even if we go to the market out there, there's no way that we can get that particular employee. Because what we need a particular person who will have the financial skills, will have a developmental skill, will have a social skill which is inclusive of the people's skill in it. Because that person, when he goes out there, he should be all round. That is the reason why we are having these interns now. We are more or less building our own artisans by those interns. Where is the next one? I'm trying to think because I'm going to leave the other ones to the COO. The attendances, I will not answer to that. You will take it there. I think let me pass it to the CEO. If there is a need, I'll come back. Thanks, ma'am. CEO?
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, good afternoon, honorable members. I think let me perhaps firstly start maybe on a slow pace just to take the committee through the impairment situation. If you go to page 43 of the annual report, the actual audited report, at the bottom there of page 43, you will see in 2009, The last figure is at the bottom is 14.7 million. That was the impairment in 2009. Now, if you look in 2009, you will see that there was no write-off at all. Now, the same applies to the previous years as well. Since SAMAF inception, there has not been any write-off. Now, you take that 14.7 million now to 2010, again on the last part of the table, then is 14.7 million, and then there is a figure in brackets of 6.1 million, 6.6179, which is now the actual write-off. Now that write-off is accumulation from 2006, which HR was talking to. Now the list of those institutions that constitute that write-off, some of them will appear on page 49. Those were the institutions that we established at the beginning, where she is saying they were not proper systems. Now, the culmination of that was that write-off now, cumulative from 2006, which is 6.179. The increase in provision, what we call impairment, is 3.6 for the year under review. It's 3.6, there is a figure there that is 3688. 478, that's the increase on provision, which now amounts to a total impairment, that is the provision, of 12.2 million for the year ended March 2010. So the difference there is that the 6179 is the write-off, which is cumulative from 2006, and there is 12,239, which is a provision going forward. I felt I needed to start there just to clarify that. The second part of it is that there is a question there that relates to 8 institutions supported against 11. Now, if you go to page 19, the performance metrics, I'm focusing on the audited, the annual report. On page 19, MFIs, you will see a cumulative figure of 27. The baseline is 16. That's the current that says since inception to March 2009. At March 2009, then, that's page 19. Page 19. 19, yes. The baseline at March 2009 was 16 MFIs, and then in addition to that, 11 MFIs were supported, which gives a total of 27. Now we have a baseline of 20 FSCs below 16 MFIs. Now supported during the year was 14 to make 24, which means now at the end of March 2010. We had a total of 51 institutions that were supported. Again, that comes from 2006. That's a cumulative figure. Now, the end result of that is that 35,884 end users benefited from those institutions. Now, when we calculate the employment figures, for instance, the starting point is that 35,884, but there will be also other people employed there, which now increases the figure. We've got the statistics, especially for the financial institutions. We've got the statistics in the office of how many people are employed by each financial institution. I think also maybe to what I'm there to try and further add to what Human Resources Aid was saying in terms of the skewed distribution or spread of support. She has spoken about bigger institutions. Now, those bigger institutions, they have got a distribution outlets in more than one province. For instance, I'll give an example of CEF, which is an institution that we assisted in Limbombo, Small Enterprise Foundation. It's got distribution outlets in five provinces. KZN is one of those provinces. Eastern Cape is one of those provinces. So in addition to the institutions that we might have helped, smaller institutions that she referred to in those areas, there are also other institutions whose head offices are elsewhere, but they've got distribution channels. Marang, for instance, in Gauteng is another example. It's got representation in six provinces. And Eastern Cape is one of those provinces. KZN is one of those provinces. We've got women's development business, whose headquarters are in Mpumalanga. Again, it's got a representation in between five and six provinces. And Eastern Cape will be one of those provinces. KZN will be one of those provinces. So over and above the information you see there in terms of direct involvement, but there are also other institutions that we supported which have spread themselves throughout a number of provinces. So that's also the impact that is there. Now, there is a multiplier figure there of 179,000 below 35,884. That's the impact that we are talking about as well. Now, that 35,884, I want to emphasize, these are end users who benefited out of these financial intermediaries that we had supported. So in turn, the multiplier effect now is that because we did not go direct, we find this, we established these intermediaries in terms of the mandate, and we fund them, we capacitate them, we fund them in order for them to fund the end users who are not able to access these financial services from the formal financial institutions like the commercial banks. I think I've spoken about the number of the FIs there. I think what you are just searching, which other questions have not been sufficiently attended to, I want to come back to the credibility of the information. This annual report, contains audited information. Now, the figures that are here were verified by the auditors. And hence, the auditors expressed their opinion. So the figures that are here are figures that are verifiable. Now, they come out of the reports that we get from the various provinces. And those reports are part of the audit work that is done by the auditors before culminating into this report, which now becomes audited report ready for presentation. And this is what goes to the public.
Thank you for the responses. I think you have attempted to respond to some of the concerns that we have, but I want to come back to, I want to agree with you that this report contains audited information from the Auditor General, and the Auditor General gives the basis for qualified opinion, and I want to read it to you. It says, I just want to start on the second sentence. Management was not able to provide sufficient and appropriate explanation in terms of operating expenses and accounts payment. I'm reading around that. Was not able to provide sufficient and appropriate explanation and or documentation to substantiate these journal entries. The unsubstantiated journal entries amounted to 1.7 million and resulted in a possible understatement of operating expenses and accounts payable. Secondly, the entity's records did not permit the application of alternative audit procedures regarding operating expenses and accounts payable. Consequently, I did not obtain all the information and explanations I considered necessary to satisfy myself as to the accuracy and completeness of the operating expenditure, accounts payable, and related disclosures. It's a serious statement in a sense of consent. And you won't blame members by asking the questions that they were asking. And let me read also around the material impairments. I think you should know the notes, but the note 6, he says, as disclosed in note 6 to the financial statements, material impairments to the amount of 6.2 million were incurred as a result of the write-off of loans provided to FI. That's a material impairment, but not as technical as Mem was saying, that it's just technical issues. I'm identifying to you the material facts around issues raised by the Auditor General. Non-consolidation of controlled financial intermediaries. To me, that is very material. You did not prepare and present consolidated financial statements, which is very, very serious. I can go on and on, but I'm trying to show you that what members are saying is as serious as that, and you cannot say it's just a technical, because to us it's quite a serious opinion. We understand the background of the institution. The period under review, 2009-2010 financial year. That's the period under review. The background, all those years, other years, were, unfortunately, we're not privy to those financial statements or annual reports at the moment. So it would be very, very unfair for us to take, you know, that history, to talk about that history that we are not privy to. We might perhaps want to go to our archives and look at the annual reports for those financial years. so that we can give ourselves a sense of what you're saying and understand from the Auditor General's perspective what was the issue. You just gave valuable information, sir, in terms of the spread of your supported institutions that are very, very valuable. But that information is not entailed here, unfortunately. It's your word against, I don't know, Auditor General or ourselves, because we don't know what you're talking about. But we, of course, know what is here. The information before us tells us exactly what the situation is on the report under review. So we're relying on the information before us. If you wanted to disclose that information, you would have included that information, because it's your information that's written here that says the 0.005. It's not us. We are taking this information from what you are saying. This information is not, the reporting is not for yourself, ma'am. The reporting is for the public. So this information must make sense to the person who picks up your report and reads it. Shouldn't be just that people will even need you to come and explain. No. The report must be very, very clear. Therefore, we feel as the committee that really we must give you time to go back and reflect on this report. Tell us if the information that is here, if you feel like you were saying now that is okay, of which we are saying is not okay. From what I heard from members, from what you are saying, it is not. And from what the Auditor General is saying, it is not. We want to give you the last. We know that you've tabled the report. We do understand, Mr. Naidu, you were just appointed in July, and which, because of issues of compliance, we are rushing to comply with the Parliament's requirements, and therefore you had to give us whatever you are giving us. We do understand. The fact of the matter is there are people who are within the institution who must account, and we want people to account. I earlier on asked you about the management letter. The management letter is issued long before audit is done, and that is the process that allows you to correct whatever, to provide information and so forth, so that by the time the Auditor General begins with the actual audit, you should have had the opportunity to correct whatever. And provision of information by the time of auditing, if that information was not there, that's why the Auditor General is writing that he could not have that information when he required it. So, we would like to give you that opportunity with that understanding, and allow you to come back to us. We will reschedule the meeting for you to come back to us and give us the correct report. We'll also find out whether we are stepping out of the procedures of the legislature, which is the Parliament. If we are, we will also bring that to your attention. But for now, we'd allow you to go back, refine whatever information that you've given us, and then upon our meeting, then we'll be able then to explain to you certain implications of what we've done. This gives you an opportunity to go and amend where possible so that you can suit whatever that information that we need. The criteria in terms of the information that we need. We also would love to get your turnaround strategy, because that would begin to give us an idea of whether things are really beginning to do or are planned towards improving or not. I think that is the message from the team. I'm not sure whether I have represented you well, members. So can we then end on that note? And Ariko will come back to you on the next meeting date. Let me thank you for availing yourself and for the report. And thank members for their attendance and for their questioning and their utmost attentiveness in dealing with this report. And hope that when we meet, we'll be really, our minds will be changed or our impression will be changed about what SAMAF is all about. Of course, we don't want SAMAF to go. It has a very important mandate from our understanding, but unfortunately, we are not representing it well, I must say. Or in terms of reports before us, doesn't look like you want to exist. Maybe Mr. Manamela is correct that perhaps it's about understanding the mandate, or perhaps the bodies that are there, warm bodies that are there, are not ready to really implement the mandate. Therefore, maybe we need some people who are ready, who will be able to take the band and run with. But it's up to you to convince us. Okay, thank you. May I then give Mr. Naidu, please don't say anything about the report. I'm just giving you an opportunity to say something or clarify if you want to.
I'm sorry, Chair. Thank you very much. In fact, we appreciate the introduction and the interaction with the committee and the intensity in which you interact with us. But I don't want to come back to the committee with the wrong presentation. I'm just trying to understand the turnaround strategy. That's fine. I'm trying to understand in terms of this annual report. There were targets set at the beginning of the year, and those targets were reported against. What would you like me to come back? I just need clarity on that particular matter.
Can someone other than the chairperson explain?
Madam Chair, my perception is obviously it must be something that is digestible, that is quite clearly supported by evidence from the annual report, but it must be in a form that we can interpret that. And obviously we must know that is reliable information, because I think there's too many, at the moment that there's information that is doubtful, then you doubt everything. So, and it must be simple and obviously interpretable.
In as far as I'm concerned, there are guidelines in terms of the annual report. Because what you are saying and what the Auditor General is saying, you have to provide perhaps, because these are two separate processes. You're supposed to convince us that perhaps the Auditor General didn't do the right work or agree with the Auditor General's view. Or say something around what the Auditor General, if he says there's no information, you have to prove to us that there's information. Otherwise, we tend to agree that there's no information. You struggled yourself, Mr. Naidu, with the information. You were saying you are not sure. You don't agree. There's so many things that you said that really made a person listening to you feel, oh, is this head of the institution really understanding the work before him or the challenges before him? Because somehow you were contradicting, information, for instance, you would say this, and then later on you'd say that. As a result, that's why we ended up with this kind of a situation where we don't understand. So what we're doing is saying, we're giving you the opportunity to verify. Go verify this information that is here. Make sure that whatever you are providing to us is the right. I can also show you something. There's somewhere where you are giving us information around disbursement 2006 to 2010. And there's somewhere where you are giving us it's both the approved funds and the loan disbursement. 2006 to 2010. And if you look at that information, you compare it with the information that you gave us here. There's no congruency there. And I think Dr. Wang raised some of these issues. So there's information that you could not provide in terms of the rural information that Mr. Zulani alluded to later on. Because I indicated, I asked that question, remember, that in terms of information prior to that, you are giving, and when you look at your tables, your diagrams, they don't tally. You have information there, but then when you go down, you don't provide information to that regard. I can go on and on, but what we want you to do is go back, look at this information. There's information of a poor quality report. I mean, what you've typed here, I don't know whether you were in such a hurry. It was not edited. And the problem is that it shows that you don't respect the parliament, our committee. We don't expect that from an institution like you. We want you to go back, relook at this, check whether the information is reliable. Be sure yourself. When Mr. Naidu is not clued in terms of the information, please refer to an official who was there so that official can give us that information with confidence. We are not left with doubts in our minds that whatever that we got is not, you know, credible. We want to be sure that you have challenges, you acknowledge shortcomings, you identify challenges accordingly, and you have a plan going forward to mitigate those challenges. This is what we need. And that must be very clear. Succinctly articulated in your report, very clear, and that will convince us that you understand your mandate and everything. That's what we need, Mr. Naidu. I can't say more than what I've said. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. morning, doctor. I think you received an SMS that was the morning.
meeting?
Meeting 45.
Okay.